Hello and welcome all of you beautiful souls. This is the Heart of the Soul podcast and I'm your host, Amana. I'm so happy that you're here. On the Heart of the Soul, we remember what it means to be wild women walking upon this earth. We share our stories and honor how they inevitably shift and change over time and depending on who we're speaking with. This is a space for story medicine, an opportunity to practice using our voices and the ancient ritual of storytelling. These stories are an opportunity to experience a deeper understanding of one another and together learn to support each other on our unique paths in this life so that we can all feel more connected and less alone. I hope that you receive wisdom as well as deep heart and soul connections as you soak in these stories today. As you can see here, if you're watching on YouTube, I am trying out a new spot for solo podcast recording today. I am down here along the river in Spokane. It's really, really beautiful, and I'm next to this lovely tree here. It's this great big tree right here that is shading me. And then this incredible river behind me. You might see or hear people passing by on their canoes and stand-up paddle boards. And there is a shooting range not far, so I've heard a few gunshots. Hopefully the mic doesn't pick those up, but they might be there, so know that that's possible. In today's episode, I'm going to be circling back to an episode that I published a long time ago, over a year ago, talking about the brain tool when working with providers of any kind, you know, dentists, physicians, nurse practitioners, midwives. I'm going to be speaking to it before I spoke to it sort of more generally. And today I'm going to speak about it in relation to care surrounding pregnancy, birth, and mothering. And yeah, it's been one of my top episodes, so I thought that it would be neat to share it from a different lens that's more birth focused, as that is my audience and the people that I work with in my soul work here in this world. I wonder if you can hear the rustling of leaves. But before I begin, I would love to read a little bit from my favorite book here, one of my favorite books, Herbal Rituals by Judith Berger. I love, love, love this book. It's a storytelling book that also teaches about herbs and goes through the different seasons and months of the world. So I'm going to read to you here from September, as it is September 4th, 2022 today. So, turning, returning. In September, the continents of the earth begins to turn again. The sylvan terrain through which the maiden rambled in spring, the sweeping fields and ripening gardens of high summer that graze the mother's thighs as she gathered the gifts of the land, transform into yet another landscape. As the harvest deepens, the fullness of the mother within each plant stretches and fattens the fruits, vegetables, and grains to new limits of roundness. As the sun weakens, the life force divides, one fork beginning a slow journey back down the stalks of the plants toward the roots, and another maturing the seeds of all plants. The honeyed yellow umbels of fennel flowers thicken into stomach-soothing crescents. The nodding ivory crowns of Queen Anne's lace turn their nest-like cups towards the ground. Wild carrot seeds jostled and scattered by the first cool gusts of the coming autumn. The whistling swell of the wind through the thinning spines and leaves of the plant reaches the ears of the crone, the ancient, aged, wise woman who rises up from her underground lair and begins to walk the fields herself. She is the dark cloak that begins to wrap the earth as the hours of daylight wane. She both utters and is the piercing cry of the geese who gather and fly south. Goddess of decay, death, and rebirth, the crone summons the colors to the leaves and the cold to the land. It is she who gives the signal for the withering to begin and for all creatures to ready their homes for winter. Her knuckles, the gnarled burls of tree trunks, the crone dresses the land in brown and touches all who live upon the earth with the desire to draw inward. Hooded in the sable of the night sky, the crone advances, her footfall unhurried and deliberate upon the leaf-speckled soil. In a voice husky with wood smoke, she summons home the abundant mother who is her daughter. And like most daughters, the mother sets loose a great surge of energy as her leave-taking draws near, unleashing a final ripeness which courses through all life. Gardens yield second harvests of basil, tomatoes, and lettuce as butternut, acorn, and sweet dumplings swash. Gift us with her mouth-watering flesh and mineral-rich seed. As the heat ebbs, summer drowsiness is replaced by a coolness which stirs our blood and invites us to enter a new cycle in which we gather, prepare, and preserve both food and our energy as the time of retreat draws near. I just love, love, love that book. And I'm definitely feeling the shift towards fall. The coolness in the air is absolutely here, even though we were in the 90s last week. But nights are beginning to be cooler. I've noticed the sunlight waning as the sun is setting earlier and earlier in this space that I'm living in the Pacific Northwest. Okay, so to give a little background to anyone who might be listening that's new, I was a registered nurse for 8 years. I have been attending births for over 10 years. I am a birth keeper, a radical birth keeper and death keeper. I was a birth assistant to midwives for several years. I have 2 living children of my own and have experienced 5 pregnancies. 3 of my births were at full term. 2 of them were attended by midwives, and the third was a free birth or wild birth without a hired medical attendant present on purpose. So that's my lens that I am sharing within. So what I want to share with you is the brain tool. So I'm going to say kind of what it is, and then we'll take each one at a time and sort of talk through that and how that might show up or how you might use that. I'd like to acknowledge that as women, as people who are birthing, women who are birthing, that we, at least here in the United States, like have been indoctrinated into the system of being the good girl and doing as we're told and being quiet and not questioning things. I know for myself, I also grew up in a family that was very medical focused and trusting doctors and not questioning them at all and doing what they say. And I In my 8 years working within the medical system as a registered nurse, I was exposed to lots of different variations of medical care and the way that it was provided and who was providing it, and have just begun to, over these last couple of years, unravel and have more awareness around the hierarchy that we step into when we choose medical care, and how, as especially as women, and especially in our nervous systems, that that can affect us in big ways, and can sometimes lead to us not speaking up when. Well, I'm gonna let this wind go for a moment. I'm not sure if it will translate on the mic. So as women who are trained to say yes and not create waves, do as we're told. I've definitely been that person myself, and it's a practice to for myself to tap into, know what do I really want that's not just answering to an authority. So when we engage with the medical system, it's set up in a way that intentionally for the system, it disempowers us as authorities as they place themselves in a position of authority. And literally sometimes, you can't putting a tag on you, a wristband, you're known by a number and not by a name. So that's something that happens within the medical system. I'm sorry, you can't really see me as well. Not that that so much matters. There's a stream of light coming through, which is beautiful. So the brain tool is something that you can bring along with you to appointments to maybe think about before you engage with the medical system, to consider before you choose a provider or someone to support you in your pregnancy and birth. This might be a tool that you could use for that. So the B in brain stands for what are the benefits. So like you can start with just like the benefits of engaging with someone, whoever that might be for you, that aligns with your values and your choices. What are the risks? What are the alternatives? What does my intuition to s say? What do I feel? How does that feel to me? Do I need more information? And do I need to make this decision right now? Or there's a little fly bug in me. Or can it wait? Does it have to happen now, or can it wait? So I feel like this can be super useful with any engagement that you do within the system. I feel like for myself, there were times where I wanted to be the good patient and the good girl and do as I was told by these medical providers that are placed in a position of authority. And what I've come to have more awareness or to recognize over time is that I was accepting care and engaging in care that wasn't really aligned with my values or my desires because I was placing these people in a position of authority and was recognizing that if I had hired someone to, let's say, mow my lawn. And but there was like one part that I wanted them to mow and this other section that I didn't want them to mow. And they came and just mowed the whole thing. And they didn't ask any clarifying questions. They didn't offer other possibilities. Maybe they could use this really a mower that made the lawn really short, or it made it 3 inches, or whatever it is. And if I hired them for that and they didn't do it the way that I had asked, would I hire them again? Like, they're providing a service, just like a medical person is providing a service, a medical provider is providing a service. And yet, for myself in the past, and for I know a lot of other people, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like someone that we're seeking, and that they have authority and that we must do what they say. But I would just invite you to question that narrative and to remember that it's called practicing medicine for a reason, because these people are practicing medicine, which is always shifting and changing. And the roots of medicine, have you ever looked into the history of where it began and how it began? I know I certainly didn't until the last couple of years after I had removed myself from the medical system. But I just invite you to feel into those different possibilities and maybe come up with some questions of your own. And yeah, okay. So a lot of women that I work with have questions about, like, how do I choose a provider? How do I choose someone that, aligns with me? And I would say that that's not necessarily a question that I can answer because I'm not them, but I can give them tools like this brain tool. And especially in pregnancy and birth, I've witnessed patterns of medical providers giving answers to people when they ask questions. That are what it seems like answers that are just to maybe quiet the worry, or what am I trying to say? That don't really fully answer a woman's questions. I'm trying to think of an example right now, and I'm having a hard time pulling one out in this moment. Or they don't address things until they get there. So a lot of people don't know that, at least in Washington state, that midwives are only allowed to attend births at home during certain weeks of pregnancy. And it's like from 37 weeks to 42 weeks. And if your birth lands outside of this range, but then they aren't able to provide you care and have to recommend that you go to a hospital for care. So that's something you might want to speak to your provider, your midwife, about before you get to those number of weeks. There also might just be things that are. We have come to a place in birth and with pregnancy where a lot of the care that is provided is us pathologizing birth and pregnancy, which means we're looking for problems where there might not be problems. We have created systems of things for people to for providers to do for things for them to document and check off a list where women, for millennia before modern medicine came to be what it is, women were doing on their own or with the women that are in their community, wise women in their community, and they weren't outsourcing their care to white men in the medical system. Just pausing because I thought I could do this without having notes of some of the things that I wanted to cover. And well, I am doing it, but I know it's not perfect. And I guess that is, my motto of how I show up with these conversations, and I don't edit them. But I just wanted to, what do I just want to, I want to, what do I want to say? These practices of modern medicine have become so common that we have, that I feel that we have just like normalized them to the point that we don't even question or think about them before we engage and accept the offers that are given to us. And one thing that I like to try and do with people is to reframe, like if a doctor says, you must have, I scheduled you for this ultrasound on this date or at this many weeks. I scheduled you for this ultrasound. It's okay to question that ultrasound and ask, is it necessary? And what are the risks versus the benefits? And what are my alternatives? And is it necessary? And we know that ultrasounds actually aren't necessary. And they give us an illusion of things being, they can give us an illusion of things being okay. But through my working in with women and in the loss community of women who have experienced stillbirth or miscarriage, early birth, is that even if an ultrasound when the woman is 39 weeks, 40 weeks shows that baby is quote unquote perfectly healthy, we cannot control life and death. There's an illusion that we can control it. There's an illusion that because an ultrasound says, report says that your baby's okay, that your baby will be born and be fine. And many of babies are born totally fine without ever having an ultrasound. The ultrasound doesn't make the baby okay. And in the United States, it's like 1 to 2% of births occur inside or outside of the hospital. So, like 98% of births are happening inside the hospital, and women and babies die in the hospital. They also die outside of the hospital, but that's only a tiny percentage of women that are choosing to birth outside the hospital. The majority of the women and babies that are dying in America surrounding pregnancy and birth and early postpartum are happening inside the hospital. And most of the women that I have communicated with about this, like women are often saying they want to go to the hospital because it's the safe place or that death won't happen there. But that's just, it's just not the case that dying does happen in the hospital. I worked in palliative care for about 5 years where I worked with people as they neared the end of their life, and some of those were babies. So that brings me to like the deeper awareness that death each day is a possibility, each minute. No one is guaranteed tomorrow. The hospital does not prevent death. Yes, there are, the hospital and medical staff can be really good at providing some life-saving care. But statistically, more and more women are experiencing what is called obstetrical violence and obstetrical rape. And the fact that there are these terms just goes to show you how prevalent it is that women are going to the hospital for this experience, for this life altering, this maiden into mother, whether it's their first baby or their fifth baby. It's a transformation for both mother and baby. We're only born once. For that baby, this is their one, for this mother baby dyad, this is their one opportunity for this birth. And the way the medical model is right now with obstetrical care, they intervene in ways that are not helpful. They don't help physiological birth. They don't hold the mother in reverence for women and our birth portals, our vulvas, our yoni, our pussy, however it feels good to call it. Like, that is one of our it is the most, like, I feel like, spiritual part of our bodies as women. It's sacred. And it's sacred each time we allow a man to penetrate us. And birthing our babies is sacred as well. And we don't need hands and tools and instruments inside of us. And yet that is what most women are experiencing. And they're experiencing it in a time when they're in labor and they're attached to an IV pole. They're in their birth realm, and which is not a time to be trying to advocate for ourselves. It's, you know, this is the time when women should be revered and honored the most. And yet, over and over again, I hear stories of women's power being pulled away from them, and that women being overpowered, women being held down and having instruments or hands inserted inside of them against their will, obstetrical rape. And this is something that just, I want to, one of my soul purposes feels like trying to raise awareness about this. And to stop it, to decrease it, at least. Like, this is not okay. A baby's first touch shouldn't be a provider's hand in a violent way while their mom is screaming, no, stop. I've witnessed some of this firsthand, and it was incredibly alarming. I was at a birth, and the woman agreed to a vaginal exam. The midwife inserted her hand. The woman, after a few moments, said, stop, no, don't, stop. The midwife didn't stop. I said, she said, stop. And finally, the woman removed her hand. It shouldn't take an outside person saying, she said, stop, for that midwife to stop raping the woman with her hand. She also broke her water without consent, broke the amniotic sac without consent. She didn't ask consent to do that, and yet she did it on purpose because she wanted this birth to go faster. So I guess I just want to invite you to also look at birth from the lens of your baby and how important this birth is to them. They only are birthed once. Those first moments outside of your body, I hold so reverent and dear, and that I want women and babies to be having beautiful, gentle touch during that time. But what I've witnessed is when medical providers are present, most of the time, babies are met with aggressive hands and instruments being shoved down their throats, oral rape to these babies in their first moments of life. And for me, with my values, that just feels so wrong. And I can't believe that this is where we're at with birth in the United States. And I hope that we can move beyond this. To circling back to this tool again, the brain tool. Let's use, for example, if your medical provider is suggesting that you do the test for gestational diabetes. So the most common test for this is to bring women into an office and have them drink a beverage that's normally, it's like corn syrup and there's food coloring in it and all these things that they would consider unhealthy, bad foods. Yet they're asking a woman to drink it, and then they test her blood sugar. And what are the benefits of this? I really fully don't understand because, so this is the question you could ask to your providers. What are the benefits and what are the risks? You know, the benefits they would say is that you would find out if you have gestational diabetes. And I would say in some circles, it's even a question whether or not gestational diabetes is real, but that's a whole other conversation. But they don't talk about the fact that there are sometimes false positives or false negatives, that that's a possibility that you might do this test. I have known women who have then been asked to come and do it again. A lot of women get nauseous and throw up or feel sick from drinking this cocktail of sugar and water and food coloring. Not that I'm surprised that would bring that to them. And what are the alternatives? So there are alternatives. They might not offer them to you. They might just say that this is the option if you want to know this, that this is the test you have to take. But there are alternatives. One, you can choose not to engage in that and choose not to do that test. Two, there are alternatives like they can give you a kit to test your own blood sugar by pricking your finger at home. And, you know, you can test your sugars over a week or 2 weeks, a few different times a day, eating the way that you eat. And maybe you know, once in a while you do have a more sugary craving and eat something like that. And you can test your blood sugar after and see what that is like. You do not have to eat this cocktail of corn syrup and food coloring to have more insight and knowledge to your blood sugar levels. And does it have to be done right in that moment when they're asking you to do it? No, it doesn't. If you say yes in the office to the test and then decide later, actually, I don't want to do that test, are you required to go in and do that test? No. You can cancel your appointment. You can not show up to your appointment. You don't have to do that test just because they want you to. Before I close, I'm going to tap into this aspect that a lot of women come to me about because they also didn't know this. So I've had my babies at home, and I know that it's a little easier to do this when you're at home, but we didn't name two of our children for a couple of weeks. And when you're in the hospital, when you're getting close to discharge, they are, if you haven't named your baby, they really want you to name your baby because it's easier for them to complete the paperwork right then and send it off. But I want you to know that you are not required to name your baby before you leave the hospital. They might make you feel that way. They might even tell you that, but you don't have to. Another thing that happens in hospitals a lot is people telling you that you can't leave without being formally discharged. And unless you have some sort of a hold on you for like a suicide watch and they're holding you because of that, or some other reason, if you're just a normal person inside the hospital, you can leave without signing discharge paperwork, without signing an AMA form. Yes, they would appreciate you signing an AMA form, which is like leaving against medical advice, but you're not required to. And some staff might tell you that your insurance won't cover your stay if you leave against medical advice. But at least in the state of Washington, that's not the case. And I would expect that it might be similar in other states here as well. And I don't know around the world. But I want to encourage you to question the care that you choose and to choose it mindfully and to perhaps use this brain tool asking, what are the benefits? What are the risks? What are my alternatives? Because there always are, even if they don't tell you. What does my intuition say? How do I feel about this? Do I need more information before I can make a decision? And then, does this need to happen right now? Like, is my hand cut off and they're gonna, it needs to be sewed on right now? I mean, that's like a certain situation where, yeah, maybe it does, you do need to say so right now. But almost every other moment, you have at least a few minutes to make a decision, if not hours, days, weeks, months, years. So, anyhow, I hope that this was helpful. I know it was a bit roundabout and saying just want to tell you this a few many times, but I hope that you found some value in this. And if you would like to look into potentially working with me one-on-one, you can go to my website, www.birthingnova.love. I do offer a 20-minute clarity call. If you're not sure if you want to work with me, you kind of want to feel out my offerings, my vibe in person, you can book one of those free clarity calls. And yeah, I look forward to seeing you next time. I'm gonna try and keep up these recordings on Sundays for a while. Life has been really beautiful and busy recently, which has brought me to slowing down and pushing pause a little bit more often on this podcast. But yeah, and I'll put a link to the other brain episode if you're interested, in the links below. I hope you're having a beautiful day. Be brave, be bold. Be love and be you.